Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Qube Holdings Limited FY 2024 full year results. All participants are in listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Paul Digney, Managing Director. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining this morning's call. Joining me, as always, is Mark Wratten and Paul Lewis. I want to start by acknowledging the traditional custodians of country around Australia. Starting on slide six of the investor presentation, full year 2024 highlights. The numbers on the slide really speak for themselves. 2024 year now marks the fourth consecutive year that Qube has delivered double-digit growth. That's a testament to our strategy and the quality of our assets, systems, and our people. It highlights the benefits of our diversification that enables the business to navigate inflationary pressures and economic challenges that have persisted throughout the year, but all over the past couple of years since COVID. It just demonstrates just how robust the Qube business is. Now, if I can turn to slide seven, Qube's key markets. As you can see, we saw positive performance across most of our key markets in 2024, and in most cases, we expect this situation to be the same in 2025. Qube is well established across these key markets, and we continue to see good growth opportunities across all the markets. Now, I'll just touch on each market briefly. Containers. Very solid performance across logistics and infrastructure, with continued market share growth in this sector in 2024. We expect the container logistics business to continue to grow at a similar rate in 2025, like it has in the past. Patrick had a strong result and was above expectations, mainly due to having higher market share than normal for a good portion of the year. That market share now has normalized back to 42% market share leading into the 2025 year. Agri. 2024 was materially lower than the 2023 year for Qube. However, in 2025, we're expecting to have a strong year for Agri. How strong that is, we'll know better in the coming months as we finalize volume commitments and terms with our customers in the short term. Automotive. We saw continued high automotive volumes across all parts of our auto businesses throughout the entire year, which we expect will ease a little in 2025. However, volumes still to be healthy through the 2025 year. Forestry. New Zealand log exports remained flat in 2024. However, earnings improved due to a cost reduction program that we conducted in the first half of this year. Australian forestry improved on the back of China lifting its bans on Australian wood and growth in the India export market. We expect our forestry volumes to be overall similar in 2025, with some earnings uplift around productivity benefits in 2025 year. The resources sector. Qube saw overall steady volumes across most customers in 2024, despite having some lumpy volume challenges with a couple of customers. We expect ongoing growth in 2025 to continue, with some ongoing challenges due to commodity prices and labor shortages, like in 2024. However, labor and inflationary challenges have improved somewhat since 2023 for us. Energy. In 2024, we continued to grow again in this energy space. In 2025 and beyond, we expect healthy growth with a pipeline of work ahead with our oil and gas and renewable customers. And the last item here, our other businesses. Overall solid earnings from other business sections such as non-containerized logistics, domestic logistics, lifting and project work activities in 2024. And this is expected to continue to grow in 2025. Now turning to slide eight, safety. We have a strong safety culture at Qube, and it's something the team has worked very hard over the 7 years journey to build. Throughout the year, consistent with our program of continuous improvement, we continue to strengthen and enhance our safety systems across the business to continue to be at the top on safety in our sector. Our performance across our key safety metrics all improved in 2024, which is a pleasing outcome. However, sadly, we had a QB employee who tragically died in an incident at our South Australian forestry operations. WorkSafe South Australia investigated that incident, and we were advised last month that the regulator had closed its investigations and had not identified any failings in QB's work, health and safety obligations. However, consistent with our commitment to continuous improvement, we have made investments into an industry-first digital communications network to increase monitoring for these remote operations, which will have the potential to strengthen safety standards for the whole industry, not just Q. Turning to slide 9, QB's revenue diversity. I won't labour on this slide. However, it shows how important our diversification strategy is from a geographic point of view. During 2024, we continue to grow that geographic footprint organically and with acquisitions in New Zealand, New South Wales and Western Australia. And as you would have seen recently, the proposed acquisition of Murat in Melbourne, which we hope to complete late in the first quarter of this year, and an acquisition of Coleman's in Western Australia, which we have announced today. Mark will cover these acquisitions in his presentation shortly, and I'll be happy to answer any questions on these later in Q&A. Now can I turn to slide 10, ongoing focus on our return on capital employed. Although we still have $780 million of capital that is not generating any earnings for QB, which includes two terminals at Moorebank, new locomotives and wagons not yet in operations, land that we've purchased to develop sometime in the future, infrastructure assets currently under construction, we continue to track towards our target of 10% return on capital employed, and we will cross that threshold soon. That has given us the confidence to review our internal target and set a new target of 12% over the midterm. And we are confident that we should be able to achieve this in the coming years, while importantly investing in select assets for long term, like we have done in the past. Now if I can turn to the divisional performance, I'll turn to slide 12, operating division. The operating division reported another year of strong underlying revenue and earnings growth, as you can see on this slide. I'll now move to the next slide, slide 13, Logistics and Infrastructure Business Unit. We saw high volumes across most container activities in this business unit and high utilisation across AAT's infrastructure in 2024. This was partially offset by a weakness in our agri-related volumes, which included a 55% decline in our grain terminal export volumes for 2023 in New South Wales, from 2023 in New South Wales. As we have flagged previously, we commenced a grain trading capability in December of 2024, and the aim there is to optimise and utilise QB's New South Wales grain infrastructure assets across 12 months of the year. This has already proven to be a good strategic step for QB, and we are well positioned to take that benefit into 2025. Moving to slide 14. Moorebank IMEX Terminal. Many of you attended our recent Investor Day at Moorebank, so you'll be familiar with the progress that we've made on the IMEX Terminal and our volume ramp-up aspirations for here on. Last year at EBIT, the IMEX Terminal lost $7 million at EBIT. In July, the combined IMEX and the adjacent container park activities made a profit for the first time of $100,000 EBIT profit in July, compared to a $600,000 loss for the same time last year. In July, we handled around 24,000 TUs through the IMEX, and that was without relocating some regional trains and other volumes to the IMEX yet. We are targeting for approximately 400,000 CU to be handled via the Moorebanks IMEX in 2025. So we're now on the way to making money from this investment as we now ramp up. Over to slide 15, looking at Ports and Bulk now. We saw strong growth in revenues and earnings with high volumes across most areas, in particular motor vehicles, energy customers and most bulk commodities. The energy business benefited from a ramp up of projects and increased the scope of work from the core warehousing and supply based services that it provides to its customers. Qube's New Zealand forestry volumes were flat. However, earnings benefited from a cost restructure that was completed in October, as I mentioned before. The results also benefited from a full period contribution from the Kalari acquisition, which is tracking in line with our expectations. And overall margins improved in the ports and bulk business unit during the year. Moving on to slide 16, Patrick. We talked at the half about the impact of the industrial action of DP World on Patrick's market share, which increased from 42% to 47% in the 2024 year on an average basis, and that being one of the key drivers in the profit uplift for 2024 for Patrick's. Patrick's ability to efficiently handle these high volumes reflects the benefits from the substantial investment in landside infrastructure and equipment that Patrick's has and continues to undertake. These investments were also the key to the strong earnings growth and productivity benefits achieved in the period. Now moving to slide 17, Moorebank Interstate JV. This will be the final slide for me before I hand over to Mark. After completion of the Interstate Stage 1A in May, the terminal was handed over to the JV to undertake ongoing management. As a result, this will now report, the interstate as an associate. The opening in May was a significant milestone for Qube, as it was great to have the Prime Minister out there to cut the ribbon. Currently, there are active discussions underway for potential users of the terminal, although no agreements have been signed yet. In conjunction with that, we are also assessing our right ownership structure for the terminal going forward, and that could include selling down equity in this asset. I will now hand over to Mark to take you through some of the key financial information in the presentation there. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Paul, and thank you to everyone on today's call for listening in. As Paul has already highlighted, it was another very strong financial result for the Qube Group for the FY24 year. And I'll now quickly take you through a few financial slides, starting on slide 19. As I said, Paul's given colour to logistics and infrastructure and ports and bulk. I'll just cover a few other points. At the group level, Qube delivered revenue growth of over $500 million over FY23. This revenue growth was boosted by the establishment of our grain trading business, which contributed circa $140 million of that increase and was predominantly delivered in the second half. Excluding grain trading revenues, our growth at the revenue line would have been circa 12.5%. Our underlying EBIT grew by almost $40 million or 14.5% over FY23. However, that growth was offset, as expected, by much higher underlying net finance costs, which was circa $32 to $33 million higher than FY23, which was reflective of the combination of increased base rates, higher debt balances, and lower interest income from our shareholder loans to Patrick, which had been progressively repaid. Net finance costs also included circa $10 million benefit from the capitalisation of interest linked to the construction costs on the IMEX and interstate terminals at Moorebank. We ceased capitalising interest during the second half, and so this amount will be part of our step-up in finance costs as we move forward to FY25. The reported EBITDA margins for the group is showing a decline from 9.4% to 9.1%. However, our margins have been negatively impacted by the commencement of the grain trading business. As I just mentioned, this business delivered circa $140 million of revenue in FY24 with no margin directly attached to it. Adjusting for this, the group's reported EBITDA margin would be slightly higher than FY23 at 9.5%. Contributing strongly to our FY24 financial results was share of profit from associates. It's mostly coming from Patrick, as Paul had set out earlier. Qube's other investments in associates entities also performed well in FY24, with Precar in particular having a very strong year. Late in the year, as Paul also mentioned, the Interstate JV, or MITCO as we call it, was formally established, and this entity holds now our investment in the Moorebank Interstate Terminal, a 65% investment. Given this asset is in the early stages, it did incur losses, and the contribution to Qube at the share of NPAT-R was a loss of $900,000 for FY24. And as set out in our FY25 guidance, the expected loss in FY25 will be materially higher. The net result of all of this was an increase in underlying NPAT-R of 13% to $271 million and underlying earnings per share of 13% to 5.3 cents per share. And on the back of this strong performance, the Qube board yesterday declared a fully franked final ordinary dividend of 5.15 cents per share, which brings our full-year dividend to 9.15, which is 13% above last year and is at the top end of our dividend payout ratio of 60%. Moving to slide 20, capital expenditure. In FY24, Qube's net capex was $615 million. We did complete three acquisitions in the first half, albeit the Narrabri acquisition was predominantly an asset purchase, and we completed a very small asset purchase in June. These acquisitions totaled $104 million, and I'll cover them in more detail in the next slide. In FY24, we invested $179 million on growth capex, which included strategic property, warehouses, storage sheds, rail assets, and other mobile transport and materials handling equipment. A number of these assets will not yet be contributing to Qube's earnings. However, most will do at some point in FY25. We also invested $224 million of maintenance and replacement plant and equipment, as set out in the table, and $124 million on the Interstate and IMEX terminal capex, which included that $10 million of capitalised interest I mentioned earlier. For both those terminals, the final capex spend in FY25 will be circa $20 to $25 million combined and will be mostly incurred in the first half. Now, taking you to slide 21, acquisitions. As I mentioned, we spent $104 million on the acquisitions during the course of the year, with the last one in June as being a small asset purchase of about $5 or $6 million in South Australia. In November, we acquired the remaining 50% of Pinnacle, which we originally bought the first 50% in May of 23, you'll remember. The integration and rebranding of this business has been completed, and pleasingly, it had a very strong performance in FY24 and is well positioned for further growth in 25. In September of 23, we acquired strategic rail terminal and grain storage and handling assets in Narrabri. And although these assets were not expected to contribute to earnings in any meaningful way in the short term, they have been important for us in setting up our grain trading business, particularly in regards to the containerised grain we are now trading. And we expect this asset will start to get very busy given the New South Wales harvest outlook. Finally, in November, Qube acquired 100% of Stevenson, which is a well-established container transport and logistics operator located in North Fremantle in Western Australia. And the integration of that business is also well progressed and should be completed in the first half. Taking you to slide 22, acquisitions to complete in 25, although one completed yesterday. On May, we announced that we'd entered into an agreement to acquire the Melbourne International Ro-Ro and Automotive Terminal, referred to as MIRAT, for a total consideration of $332 million plus costs, which will be funded from Qube's available undrawn debt facilities. MIRAT is the only dedicated roll-on, roll-off terminal servicing the Victorian market with a long-term lease over key port infrastructure. This acquisition is expected to be EPS accretive in 25 and will meet Qube's return on capital hurdles over the medium term. Completion is conditional on ACCC and Port of Melbourne approval and is expected to complete in the first half of 25. Accompanying the release that we put out this morning on our results was the announcement of the acquisition of Coleman's business in Western Australia, which completed yesterday afternoon. Coleman's is an integrated transport, logistics and storage business with a portfolio of specialised licensed infrastructure supporting the SSAN supply chain in Western Australia. Consideration for that acquisition was $119 million plus costs, and again, that acquisition was funded through our available liquidity. Including in the Coleman's acquisition, we acquired over $90 million worth of property and assets, including high security storage sheds in key mining centres of Kalgoorlie, Port Hedland and Wyndham, as well as another important shed in Kwinana. This gives Cube, this acquisition gives the, provides Cube entry into the West Australia SSAN supply market and complements our East Coast services, which we acquired through the Kalari acquisition in May of 23. As with Murat, this acquisition is expected to be modestly EPSA accretive in FY25 and will exceed Cube's minimum ROCE target with it when synergies have been fully realised, which is expected to be within 2 years. I'll now take you to slide 23. This is a busy slide and I won't talk to each item. Cube finished FY24 with a net debt at June 24 of $1.215 billion, which while a material increase over where we started the year, it's actually $30 million less than what we reported at December 23. This was due to a stronger second half cash flow result, no material H2 acquisitions and the unwind of some working capital items which I had spoken about back in February. Key outflows in FY24 included the CapEx, which I spoke about, dividends, interest and tax of $274 million, grain trading working capital of $80 million, which is mostly comprised of grain inventory on hand at June 30th, and I'll talk about that a little shortly in a few minutes. Key inflows included cash received from associates of $100 million, which is predominantly dividends and interest payments from Patrick. Patrick also repaid $45 million of its shareholders' loans in late FY24. In FY24, Cube received another $53 million of deferred payments relating to the Moorebank terminals, and the only deferred receipts remaining from the terminal transaction now relates to the Logos share of the interstate terminal, and the first tranche of $8 million was received in July. In regards to our working capital performance, it improved in the second half. As I said earlier, our prepayments unwound, non-grain inventories reduced, and we continue to focus on receivable management. Our full-year cash conversion was 92% if we exclude the build-up of grain inventories and the associated working capital with that new business. Including the impact of the new grain trading business, our cash conversion was at 77%. The 92% number but was impacted by the taking on of working capital balances from those acquisitions that I mentioned earlier. The commencement of our grain trading business has required an investment in working capital. I did speak about that in February. And as at June, that sat at $80 million. $70 million of that was grain inventory that we held on storage at June 30th. But during July, circa $38 million of that grain has since been delivered, invoiced and paid for. So it does cycle. As we look forward to FY25 and the expected strong grain season in the areas that Cube operates, we do expect that our working capital needing to be deployed in that business will increase further in the first half, mainly in Q2. And then progressively unwind in the second half. Finally, moving to slide 24, balance sheet and funding. As I mentioned back in February, we had a very active first half in regards to our balance sheet and our funding. We put in place new facilities totaling $740 million. Most of those had five-year terms. We terminated $515 million of expiring facilities, including our highest cost debt, which was the ASX-listed notes. And we, in the second half, we extended a further $150 million of bank debt. And with all of that, our average tenure of our facilities increased from 2.5 years to 3.2 years at June 24. Our gearing ratio increased to just over 27% on the back of the increased debt balances. However, it's still well below the board lower range policy range of 30% and well within our covenant. At June 24, we had $990 million of available liquidity, comprising undrawn debt facilities and cash. The Murat and Coleman's acquisitions that I just spoke about will absorb a good chunk of our current available liquidity and will take our our gearing ratio temporarily into the middle of the board 30 to 40% range. And as you have seen in our 25 guidance, we are considering some asset sales, which may generate between $180 to $250 million of cash, which will assist in topping up our liquidity. Finally, management have always got ongoing initiatives in place to ensure the business has the appropriate funding structures and options available to it to ensure that we continue to take advantage of the numerous growth opportunities that come across our desk. And with that, I'll pass you back to Paul.
Thanks, Mark. So turning to slide 26 now, full year 24 summary. So to summarise, today's result shows that we have the right strategy, the right mix of quality assets, people and systems to consistently deliver sustainable growth. As I mentioned at the start, 2024 marks the fourth consecutive period in which Cube has delivered double-digit earnings growth, and the business consistently delivers revenue growth well above GDP through organic and inorganic growth avenues. And also, as mentioned earlier, our SAM performance and the roadmap ahead when it comes to return on capital has given us the confidence to increase our target to 12% over the medium term. Turning to slide 27, Cube strategy. I won't spend too much time on this. This slide really underscores the benefit and the value of the Cube strategy. Cube's multiple growth drivers have supported sustainable high growth across our key markets, despite at times challenges in certain markets. And in a tough year, Cube has prospered with our diversification strategy, where some of our peers in the transport and logistics space may have struggled. Turning to the last slide to finish our presentation for today, slide 28, full year 25 outlook. Having achieved another strong financial performance in 2024, we are well placed to navigate the economic uncertainties ahead and to continue to deliver earnings growth. We've had a positive, strong start to the year, but it's only 1 month out of 12, and we're not going to get ahead of ourselves, and there's a long way to go. In full year 25, we expect to deliver strong underlying revenue and EBITDA growth. It includes improved agri volumes and continued high volumes in most areas of our business, as well as the contribution from the 2024 and the 2025 acquisitions that Mark just spoke about, and growth capexes and new contracts that we've won recently. We also expect continued underlying NPAT and EPSA growth in 2025, although the growth rate at this point in time is expected to be modest compared to the strong growth rate we achieved in 2024. This is mainly due to the lower NPATR contribution from Patrick's, with Patrick's market share normalising back to 42%, and due to initial losses with the Moorebank Interstate JV as it starts. And in finishing, the diversification of our business is a strength, and we continue to see both organic and inorganic opportunities across our key markets and geographies. I'm very confident in our strategy, and it's very proven, which will continue to generate shareholder value now and for the long term. That finishes our presentation today, and I'm happy to take questions, and I'll hand back to the moderator. Thank you.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Anthony Mulder with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Morning all. If I can start with the sale of these assets of the Moorebank Interstate Terminal, just the justification as to why you're looking to exit that asset?
Anthony, we've just flagged it. It's a consideration. As you are probably aware that, a core part of our strategy, a core part of our assets at Moorebank is the IMEX terminal. The interstate terminal is a part of our deal with the government, was an obligation. And under a joint venture arrangement with open access, if there is interest from others, we're not really losing too much strategic benefit. We can still use the asset. And our core focus is around IMEX. So we're just considering all options, and if there's interest, we'll consider it. That's where we're at this point in time.
Yeah, okay. And so what does that mean? Does that suggest that there's a lower interest in joining the congestion on the interstate rails with a rise in Pacific National? Is that what we take for
yeah.
that?
And also, yeah, well, I mean, yeah. Sorry, you got to finish, sorry.
I was just going to also ask as to what that means for Beveridge. Do you really need to exercise that option down in Beveridge?
We'll consider everything. I mean, Beveridge is maybe a different circumstance for us as well. So probably answer the first part of your question. We're not active in that intermodal interstate space at this point in time. We did put a pause on it. given that Aurizon entered back into that market. So that's a part of our consideration on the interstate at Moorebank. It is a joint venture structure, so we're just considering, you know, do we need to own it? Is it the best use of our capital? Can we use it in the future? Yes. Beverage is probably a different consideration for us.
Okay, understood. Thank you. Can I ask on the acquisition of Commons? We've seen a lot of bolt-on acquisitions, but obviously a lot of acquisitions over in WA. At what point do you think you've got sufficient scale in the WA market that you're more likely to go for growth that's more organic than acquisition-led?
Yeah, we saw the Coleman's acquisition is pretty unique. It's a unique sort of supply chain asset. It's sort of some ways hard to replicate given the licensing and the type of facilities they were. So we saw it as a definitely an infrastructure play. And so when these assets come to market or there's discussions about it, we looked at it. It complements Kalari. It complements our inbound mine supply logistics with the Kalari acquisition. So given the timing of it, given what we do on the East Coast in that space, we saw it as a really good opportunity. So we didn't want to miss that opportunity.
If I stay on acquisitions, the Murat terminal down in Melbourne, Wilhelmsen's obviously a key user of that terminal. Do they have a long-term contract to continue to use Murat in Melbourne?
They don't have a contract, but at the end of the day, Murat is the only Ro-Ro terminal in Melbourne, so they will be using that terminal.
Obviously, there's land bridging opportunities that others are talking to. I wonder this, and they're using vehicles. I'm just interested as to what that meant, if anything, for Murat, probably too early days. Last thing on guidance, take the fact that it's more back to a qualitative guidance, not a quantitative guidance. That we're just here in August, 10 and a half months out from the end of the year, as opposed to something that you're probably more definitive of or more visibility to in February?
Potentially, yeah. Yes. Like last year, I think.
Yeah, okay, so we'll still get...
As we get deeper into the year, yeah. We can be
and last question, if I could, the 6% effective net interest cost of the debt, how does that profile if we start to get interest rate cuts next year? How leveraged is that to, how quickly can that come through the net interest line?
Very quickly. We do have some hedging in place, Anthony, but, you know, we would benefit from a interest rate cut, without a doubt.
All right, that's it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Anthony.
The next question comes from Jacob Kakarnis with Jarden Australia. Please go ahead.
Morning, Mark. Morning, Paul. I'm just going to start with Patrick's, if I can, please. You've given us an average market share for FY24 of 47%. You've told us it was 49% in the first half, but it looked like the average share that you retained through the second half was 45%. I think the commentary so far on the call has been that you're trending back at that 42% level. I think the commentary at the Investor Day was surrounded around you wouldn't see market share back to DP World unless there was volume growth back in the market. Can you just talk to some of those dynamics and how we think that plays through the earnings guidance, please?
We've got back to 42%. Everything's normalised now. I think in the first half, at some point, we're closer to 49%. And then it's found its way back to 42%, which is really on the back of all that industrial action that occurred at DP World. So we're already at 42% at this point in time, and we believe that's going to be stable throughout the year.
Cool, thanks for that. Just in the ports and bulk business in the second half, looks like you had a pretty strong uplift in both EBITDA and EBITA margins. Can you just give us a sense of what's gone on there? Is there some mix issues that we need to be considerate of? Is there operating leverage that's flowing through there? Just give us a little bit more than what's in the presentation materials on that, please.
I think we've spoken over the last year or so that, you know, the ports and bulk business going through some of the challenges around inflationary rises, costs and costs and catch-up, and some of the issues around labour supply and having additional costs around contractors. I mean, that's minimised a fair bit, and the team's been working hard to improve their margins. So we were sort of at the bottom of the curve probably last year, and we're moving the way back up with our margin improvements. So it's a mix of things, and it's a focus from the management team to do it like they always do.
We also, Jake, as we remember, we spoke about in February around the cost out or the right sizing of the New Zealand business.
Oh yeah,
that was in sort of October, November of last year. So we got a full 6 month benefit of that. That contributed to that that improved second half.
Okay, so then there's a few months, I guess, of that operating leverage or the shape of that operating leverage to come in the first half of 25 then.
Yep.
Cool. Just one final one, Mark, just while you've got the mic. The net interest guidance, can you just confirm that includes some of the acquisition funding in those two that you've announced today?
Yeah, that's correct, Jacob. That our guidance includes assumptions that Coleman's was coming on board and that Murat will complete in the first half. And so we've included those funding costs within that guidance range.
Easy. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Jacob.
The next question comes with Anthony Longo with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Paul, Mark, and Paul again. Just again, following up on the guidance commentary, in light of the comments that you have made thus far and the expectations into 25, am I right to assume that at an operating level, you're still expecting some reasonable earnings growth on that front, and then ultimately that more modest guidance that you have given at NPATA is largely that Patrick drag, the Moorebank drag, and also that interest step up?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Anthony. So good, a strong, continued good growth in the operating business. Patrick coming back because of its overperformance last year, higher interest costs, and then the impact predominantly of the increased losses on the interstate JV. It gets down to those big numbers.
Yeah, perfect. No, thank you. And then in terms of, so thinking about the 12% target that you've spoken to today, I mean, how do some of those new acquisitions fit in with that? So I'm assuming it's probably accretive to your initial 10% target, but if you can perhaps sort of help us understand multiples, what the implications and ramp-up of earnings might look like over the next little while, that'd be great too.
Yeah, they're broadly in line. The synergy value needs to kick in over the next 1 to 2 years on both acquisitions. They're broadly in line, and they're good quality assets.
No worries. And then the final one from me. So appreciate the working capital, and thanks, Mark, for all that the detail in the slide there. But your cash conversion this year looked a little bit softer, and appreciate the reasons for it. But how do you think about cash conversion going forward? What once you sort of cycle some of these working capital issues and businesses sort of start growing from here?
Yeah, well, there's always a lot of moving pieces. As I spoke about in February, we weren't really sure how the grain inventory or the grain trading business would impact our working capital. It was only sort of circa $10 million at December, but as I said, it's gone up to $80 million. As I've guided to, it will go up again in the first half, predominantly in the second quarter when the harvest comes through, and then unwind in the second half. We have a first half, second half sort of cycle around certain lines, which I spoke more about in February, around insurance payments, which become prepayments in the first half, unwind in the second half, STI payments and a few other things like that. So they're all the same. Acquisitions, when we take on board their working capital, sort of tend to sort of throw that number out a little bit as well. Overall, you know, the biggest item really is around our receivables, and that has gone up. We've got obviously revenue growth that's driving that too. But, you know, some of our bigger customers, as I've said a few times, make a bit of an art form of of delaying their payments for as long as they can, which is where our management team are heavily focused on trying to improve their behaviour, put it that way. But I'm not concerned about. I think typically the business has delivered really good, strong cash. But there's just a few of these things that, Anthony, that sort of would mean that number might flip up or flip, improve above 100% or come back down, depending on some of those things. And I think the key for me is to be really transparent with you guys.
No, perfect. I'm sorry, one last one from me. Like the CapEx guidance looked a little bit higher than what I was expecting, both from, so excluding acquisitions, sort of your maintenance and non-growth other growth except acquisitions. I mean, can you perhaps... let us understand, what that CapEx phasing and profile looks like going from here, like given the investments that you have made in the business over the past few years and what sort of ex-acquisition sort of CapEx guide that you sort of manage the business to?
Again, excluding M&A, because there's a big chunk, as you can see in the two that we've got there lined up. Maintenance CapEx, I think you'll see maintenance CapEx. I mean, I know I've spoken about it for the last few years, but we'll definitely sort of be, in that 90% or there, maybe even lower range in FY25. I think that will probably be the case for the next couple of years. I think the guys are very focused on that. And then it's really growth CapEx, and that number could be much higher or much lower. We get an enormous amount of opportunities across our business. And I think, the focus is that we deploy that capital effectively, and now we've, as Paul mentioned, we've increased our return on capital hurdles. We've had that 12% hurdle sort of internally for a while, but we're now brave enough now to go out and sort of share that with the market. It's hard to sort of on the growth CapEx, we could dial that right down if we needed to, but likewise the guys have all got long pipelines of opportunities in front of them, and we evaluate them one by one.
That's great. No, thanks for the colour. I'll pass it on. Cheers.
Thanks.
The next question comes with Matt Ryan with Barrenjoey. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, Mark. Hi, Paul. I had a question on grain trading and whether you can give us some, I guess, colour or better understanding about that business. I can see that it had about a 2% impact to your logistics margins. So can you just talk about, I guess, the inherent volatility in that business and I guess, how we think about margins in that context?
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, we kicked that off in December. It's going to be proven to be very... strategically beneficial for us. We're already seeing that probably better than expectations in the first quarter of this year, the amount of grain that we've been able to, buy ourselves and trade ourselves in the first quarter before the harvest starts, and we've been able to fill infrastructure up. So strategically, not just the trade itself, but how it actually feeds our infrastructure. We got a bit of benefit out of that last year, but coming into this year we can see, and as I mentioned before, we don't know how strong this will be, and a part of this is really how effective this strategy is going to be, but we're pretty confident that we're going to get assets utilisation over 12 months a year, where some other people don't get assets utilisation over 9 months. So in regards to trading, we've got a trading mandate that has guardrails around how we trade and what we trade and what risk we take. Is there an opportunity to make some profit on some trades this year? Potentially there is, but we've got a good mandate and processes in place. So, and we're within that time frame, we've put together a pretty smart team. So we're really confident what that brings to us this year.
Thank you. And with your upgrade to your return hurdle to 12%, I'm just interested in your comment a second ago that you've had that target internally for a while. Can you just talk about, what you're seeing out there? You seem to have been reasonably active with M&A, at least at the larger end, over the last year or so compared to prior years. Are you sort of thinking that hurdle rate needs to be higher? And if so, can you, higher than the past, that is, can you sort of dig into, I guess, the drivers of say, sort of why you've landed on a higher number?
I think we think we can achieve the quality of our business, the size of our business, how we get synergy benefit going forward with you know, putting acquisitions or better infrastructure, buying assets, quality assets into our business that allows us to get more synergy value. But in saying that, we'll buy businesses that may not achieve that rate, but we know in the long term they're a great asset. So we're not going to go away from that. So it's been a bit of a balance for us. I mean, do we set 15%? But then we have a whole heap of short-term thinking. So 12% has become the number that we feel that we can continue to do what we do, invest for the long term, but also deliver good earnings.
Just to put more colour on that, Matt, on slide 10, you know, which includes the ROCE slide, we sort of talk about, that, and Paul spoke about the $700 million of capex, capital that's employed as at June that's not really generating target earnings. In fact, some of them are losses. If you just exclude the two Moorebank terminals, our 9.5% ROCE would be 10.5%. That's just taking that capital out. You know, once we get all that $718 million working effectively, plus there's other parts of our business where the returns are not where they want to be, so well, we want them to be. So I think, you know, that's where it sort of gives us confidence that to move it to 12. I mean, we'll but again, as our investment committee, and we look at things, you know, we might want to, you know, invest at something that's lower than that, but we know that, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the track, it's gonna, you know, start to deliver returns well above, you know, say 10% if we chose that one. So, yeah, I think we're confident that we can get to 12%, and you know, it's I think just focusing on those ones that we've already got that aren't contributing will get us almost there anyway.
Thanks. And just a really quick one to finish, the $180 to $250 million range that you've given for asset sales, does that include any part of the interstate terminal at Moorebank?
It could. We've got a number of assets that we feel like, do we actually need to keep them? Is there a better owner of those assets? Is there a better use of our capital? And we're flagging that potentially there potentially might be some divestment. We're not selling anything we don't think that we will need in the long term, or if we do sell it, we can use it in other ways, like I mentioned before, in the interstate. So to answer your question, yes, but it may not be the interstate terminal.
Got it. Thank you.
The next question comes with Andrew from Muir with UBS. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Just firstly, on the proposed Mira acquisition, could you give us a bit of an update on your level of confidence or progress on achieving the required approvals, for example, with the ACCC, and then whether or not you've got strategic plans for that asset that are greater than just continuing the Ro-Ro services? Are there options to use the space differently?
We're making good progress. ACCC has given a date for a decision, being 20th of September. We're working towards that. We're confident that that date can be achieved with what we're doing in regards to getting the approval process and our undertaking. Accepted. We've already got an undertaking. We just we need to overlay the AAT undertaking with Murat. We're in a good space, but we're always in the hands of the ACCC from a time frame point of view. In regards to the asset, it's an asset we know really well. It's an asset we can actually manage very well going forward. So we like the asset. We've made that assessment. We had the opportunity to buy the asset. You most people are probably well aware that, you know, the AAT assets and what we've done with those assets. So, we're really excited to own that asset when we do.
Okay. And there's a comment in your presentation about the potential for special dividends when circumstances justify it. Could you say more about what those circumstances are, and does it relate to your earlier comments around potential asset sales?
Yeah, look, I think there's always sort of an opportunity for that, but you know, from our perspective, it would really need to be on the back of a sort of a major sort of capital, you know, return, as was so, for example, the Moorebank Warehouse precinct. You know, that obviously was a huge return back, and we wanted to give some back to shareholders. But you know, in the absence of that, like that 180 to 250 million, you know, that, as I said earlier, that will help top up our liquidity. So, and we're quite conservative on our liquidity, so we'd like to sort of keep that there ready. And as I also said earlier, we've got numerous investment opportunities in front of us. So, you know, I don't think they should be holding out for anyone should be holding out for special dividends in the absence of a sort of a large sort of capital return, which is not, you know, not being called, you know, as in, sale of a large asset to get a huge amount of money back in, which has not been contemplated at all.
Sure. And just one last one following up on the commentary around the grain trading business. Mark, you made a comment around it contributing about $140 million revenue, and that being predominantly second half weighted. So should we think about a full year run rate of roughly double that? And I know there was a comment around sort of the volatility, you know, sometimes profits, sometimes losses on the actual trading, but given the role that it plays in strategically underwriting some of the volumes through your terminals, is it, like, should we think of it as longer term break even or even loss making through the cycle?
Yeah. I think you should longer term think it as it's going to be, you know, have a small contribution to the group. And that's up net of paying for all of the, you know, the investment of the people and resources required to run that part of the business. And also its working capital contribution to pay for its working capital that it's using. In terms of, you know, its key, you know, the strategic reason is that it allows us to sort of feed our infrastructure in a really controlled manner, which helps to deliver profits in those parts of the business. From a trading perspective per se, we've got very prudent position. We hedge, hedges aren't perfect, but they're, you know, grain is not a very volatile commodity. So we don't think that there's any much in the way of downside risk for us in that regard. In terms of revenue numbers, given the outlook for the New South Wales crop, it's probably, you know, second half number, double it, but add a little bit more, I'd say too, because we were only just ramping up, don't forget, during the course of the second half. So I think, you know, it's hard to predict what it will be, but we think it's going to be materially higher than double.
Right,
but again, like I said in February, and like what we did now, we will be again very transparent around what that business revenues and margins are and the impact, because we do need to carve it out when you look at the group margins, because it will have the impact of maybe, you know, dampening them down as it does at face value with the numbers that we've got here.
Sure, thanks.
The next question comes with Cameron McDonald with E&P. Please go ahead.
Good morning. So a couple of questions from me, just in terms of the Patrick guidance. So you've said NPATA down 10-15%. How much of that is actually the higher interest costs versus the underlying normalisation of volumes at the EBITDA level?
It's mostly the latter, the volumes and the market share and that line. Finance costs just slightly going up.
Perfect, thank you. You've previously talked about New Zealand and wanting, you know, and Pinnacle and the opportunity to create a, you know, a footprint in New Zealand with that sort of, you know, represents more like what you do here in Australia. Can you give us an update on how you're thinking about New Zealand more broadly?
Yeah, it hasn't changed. The team's obviously been bedding down Pinnacle, which is now called Cube Logistics New Zealand. We rebranded it. There's some opportunities to bolt on organically and that they're working through at the moment. So, yeah, it's a step in the right direction. Is it going to be large in the next year or 2 years? No, it's going to just be incremental.
Okay, thank you. And then just in terms of those asset sales, so are you suggesting that Mitco could be completely sold or just sold down to a more minority stake? And are you talking about selling any, you know, assets that are currently sort of strategically being held, like rather than anything that's income producing?
With Mitco, anything's on the table. The only assets we're looking to sell are assets that we don't probably need long-term strategically, because of things have changed since we owned them 6 or 7 years ago, or they're assets that we don't really need to have anymore. And if there's a right buyer there at the right value, there's a number of assets that way. But I mean, it's just we're just looking at our capital management at the moment, and if there's an opportunity, do we sell anything? Maybe not. I don't know. But we think between two or three assets we're looking at the moment, probably one of them we will divest. So that's why we're given that guidance.
So maybe ask that in another way. Have things changed in the last 5 or 6 years with some of these assets that the alternative use of these assets is actually worth more than what could potentially be used from an operational perspective?
Potentially, or we've developed another part of our business that we can consolidate into. So it's just a combination of things.
Okay, and then sort of linking into that, I mean, Mark's also talked about the gearing going between, you know, up to the midpoint of the guidance range. How much pressure do you have to sort of bring that back down before you need to, or have got the capability to do something, you know, larger in terms of the capex?
Yeah, no. I mean, no real pressure. I mean, we've well within our covenants, so we've got plenty of headroom there. Look, I think we will peak probably at December in terms of the gearing, and then see it tick down a bit at by June of next year. And that's on the assumption there's no more big M&A, and just with the sort of the capital that we've guided to. But yeah, there's no real pressure in that regard. So, we'll continue to look at opportunities, but, these bigger ones like Coleman's and Murat, they don't come along that often.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes with Scott Ryle with Rimer Equity Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. I was wondering if I could ask a slightly different question on Patrick. The primary union down there is part of the CFMEU, which is about to be put into administration, could be as early as the end of next week. What does that mean for Patrick, please?
I don't think it means anything, to be honest. The MUA is a separate branch. That's not going into administration.
It's not?
No, not the maritime branch of it. It's only the construction.
Yeah, okay. Is there the potential, though, that maybe there's some sort of change in, I guess, behavioural aspects from the union, do you think, or is that unlikely?
I'd like to say potentially, but I'm not too sure.
Okay. All right, we'll leave it there. You also released today your sustainability report. I was just wondering, you've been trialling a range of different technologies to decarbonise your broader fleet. I was wondering if you could just give us an update as to what you're finding, is working, what's not working so well, just in terms of thinking about the next few years of change in use of technology?
Yeah. I think the roadmap on our Scope 2s is pretty clear in regards to having green energy to operate our facilities in the midterm. Technology around light vehicles and EVs, around that, there's a good roadmap there, and we've started to replace our equipment that way. Large heavy haulage equipment, it's still difficult. I mean, we're looking to find the real solution there. We have been trialling a number of different technologies and with different OEMs, and I think our position at the moment, we will continue to do that. We haven't got the game changer yet, but we're trialling as much as we can, and keeping it commercial at the same time.
Yep. Okay. And then the last question is just on Coleman, and you've answered a couple of questions on this, but I was just wondering how, given the nature of activity with highly sensitive, freight movements, can you just explain to me how that actually has synergy with a broader network in Western Australia, please? I get the business might make perfect financial sense, on a standalone basis, and you've highlighted the assets you're buying and the price you're paying and all of that. So I'm not questioning that side of it. I'm just wondering, you made a few comments on how it fits with your network, and I'm just a bit confused on that, just given what it does.
Yeah. So in all the locations, we've already got locations. We're already, we've got management teams. And so there's a real alignment around in that bulk space around synergies. With the Kalari acquisition, before Kalari, we were more about the outbound logistics, getting mining commodities from the pit to the port. This complements our sort of inbound supply service abilities, and a bit like Kalari. So, and given the quality of the asset, the uniqueness of it, it fits in, so we can store and deliver SSAN product going forward.
Can you use the same trucks to go into a mine site as you use to take commodities from pit to port? No. Okay.
Not with this type of product.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So you won't get the synergy in regards to the haulage part, but there's a range of synergies around location, what we offer to customers.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all I had.
Cheers.
The next question comes with Owen Birrell with RBC. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. I guess the first question for me, just on the logistics business. I wonder if you can provide a bit of colour around what happened in the first half with respect to your margins. I look at EBITDA margins and they're running at around about sort of just a little bit over 21% last year. First half, they jumped by about 200 basis points, and then the second half, they've come back down just below 21% again. And I just wondered what caused that jump in that EBITDA margin in the first half?
Yes. So, Owen, the first half, even though we had a very poor, outcome from the agri with the volumes being down there, we had a very strong performance in the other parts of the business, and particularly automotive, and that's quite a high margin business as well. So it's really just a balance of those things.
And so what you're saying is that in the second half has automotive come backwards, or
it's come back a little versus the first half for sure. Yep.
And I guess I'm asking, should we take second half as being kind of more normalised levels of, portfolio margin?
Well, I'd probably take the blended for full year.
But we've got a whole different scenario with agri in that space being much better than last year. So I wouldn't take that approach.
Yeah. We'd need to.
Okay.
Yeah, grain trading in the second half too. Paul Lewis just chipped in, and he's correct, because that if you take off the $140 million of revenue,
I've already adjusted for that.
Sorry, I already stepped down.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And just like, second question for me, the increased target to 12% over the medium term, you know, acknowledging the comments that you said there that the operating ROCE is around sort of call it 11 to 11.3%, and the group ROCE are around sort of 10.5%. Just wondering in terms of what you see as the key drivers to improve that ROCE, is it really just about increasing utilization of underperforming assets, or is it more about cost out? Just trying to get a sense of how you're going to drive that ROCE up that extra 200 basis points.
Yeah, we've got a whole toolkit really. It's improving earnings, which could be through from, you know, cost management. Higher utilization is always good. Price management is another one of those. You know, extracting underperforming assets out as well. Those types of things. So it's not one focus. You know, I think there is such a strong focus within the group around return on capital at all levels, that management, even at the operating management line, are always focused on how they can do more with what they've got, improve their productivity, et cetera. So, and then obviously we've got, as I said, we've got pricing opportunities, cost out opportunities, et cetera, et cetera. So all of those things will, you know, hopefully work towards getting us above that target.
Can I ask just that increase in that target? How much of a trigger has that been for the comments around selling assets? You know, are these predominantly going to be underperforming assets that you just don't think you can turn around?
Not necessarily. No.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, guys.
The next question comes with Robbie Cole with MS. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you and congrats on the result. Just a couple of quick questions. Just for your asset sales, and I hear what you're saying about assets you don't strategically need. Included in those things under consideration, is there any like real estate that you'd sell and then lease back?
Potentially, but not, potentially, maybe not lease back.
Yeah.
And it's not financial engineering. Right. It's not financial engineering, so I'm not trying to just book a profit or whatever. It's about, as Paul said, assets we just don't need anymore because we can consolidate, or similar to what we did with the Chalmers transaction, for example.
If there's a better owner, yeah, right. and there's a value to it that we want to take at this point in time, we'll consider it.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I hear that as the primary driver. I just wanted to double check on the other bit, and so that's clear.
Yeah.
All right. I guess my next question relates to the grain business that you set up, and thank you for all of the granularity of detail there. How should we think about how the business would go in like a really tough drought year, like, I don't know, 2019, 2018. Is that where your utilization, even in those years, goes down, or are there maybe other crops that you can use the infrastructure for?
There'll be some assets we can't utilize again. That's a reality. The grain trading arm is one of the reasons we've done that, is really to help us out in you know, medium to low seasons, where we can be able to trade or, you know, pick up grain where the grain's available to move through our assets. So the volumes aren't as low as probably been waiting on customers to use our assets. That gives us some leverage during those tougher periods. So that's a part of that strategy as well.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. All right, and then just last question from me is on the long-term incentive plan from FY24, where you've got, amongst other metrics, you've got an EPSA CAGR range, and you're off to a very good start there, so hoping for the best. Just wondering if you could give us any colour on where the adjustments would be made for acquisitions. Is there like a threshold size, or does MIRRAT fall within the existing target, or is there, if you could give us any colour on that, please.
Good question.
I think it'd be a matter for the board at the time, but to answer that last part, no, there's no adjustment for MIRRAT.
No.
I think the intention is more just that under the plan, you wouldn't want it to be a disincentive for doing a significant acquisition. Like, using this purely as an example, if Patrick, for example, happened in the last year, and by doing that, the right thing strategically makes a lot of sense, but it would mean you wouldn't hit a hurdle that you otherwise would, then that would be a consideration. Ultimately, the board would need to be comfortable with the right balance between shareholder value creation and being fair, but there's no hard and fast rules. It's for the board to determine, having regard to all relevant considerations.
Okay, great. Yep, thanks, Mr. Lewis. Makes a lot of sense. All right, thanks. That's all from me.
Thanks, Rob. Another 12 call.
The next question comes with Andrew Hodge with ACC. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. I've got three questions. First is for the asset sales. I think you made a comment before about saying 6-7 years ago. From memory, the only two you've made in that period would have been Moorebank as well as MCS. And so I'm just trying to figure out, like, whether or not you're, if we're looking at Moorebank as well, and the comment about saying it's not something you can't turn around, can you give a little bit more explanation for why you'd want to sell something which you still think you can turn around?
No, it's, the Moorebank interstate terminal was always secondary to the IMAX in our strategy, and it was an obligation that was basically put on us by the federal government to build. Our view is at the moment we may hold it. We may stay there at our 65%. But given the open access regime and given the we've always said it won't make it, the earnings won't be as great as the IMAX going forward. The jewel in the crown is the IMAX. So to make that work, and if there's other players that want to have an equity stake in it and potentially bring volume, we're listening to them. That's basically what's happening.
And I think the other point to add just with the joint venture is, unlike, say, the IMAX, we don't control it. There's joint venture partners. So what we've typically done on other sites is we can take an asset and optimise it. There's much less ability to do that because there are other stakeholders, and therefore the approval process is not about Cube, it's about the joint venture. So it's much more a standalone asset, which, as Paul said, operation-wise, we can use it to run trains if we ever want to. But strategically, in terms of what we normally do and where we maximise value, much more limited.
Okay. Second question is, for the FY25 growth, how much of that is based on MIRRAT and Coleman?
We haven't guided to that, but it's a contribution for sure. I mean, I don't want to throw off the top of my head because I couldn't tell if it's 25% or 30, and I probably wouldn't if I did know. But it's they're going to contribute without a doubt. Not a huge amount at NPAT because of there will be funding costs as well. But at EBIT, they'll be part of our growth for sure.
Yeah, I'm just cognizant of the ACCC stuff with Merritt. That's all.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, we're sort of, obviously, Murat in particular, because that hasn't completed, we've sort of, within our guidance, we've got it pegged in the first half, and if that sort of, is delayed for whatever reason, that will have a potentially small impact.
Okay.
Cube being cube, what goes up somewhere goes down somewhere else, and we always get where we need to get to.
And my last question is the Coleman Trestle business. I mean, the brothers are trying to sell this business about a decade ago and couldn't get it done. And I'm just curious, like, why now? Like, did you guys look at it then when they tried to sell it? And what gives you comfort now, given its, leverage to mining, that you guys can do it better?
I think they're 10 years older, and they were willing to sell, being 10 years older at retirement age. That's probably why the transaction occurred, actually.
Yeah, we've part of our due diligence. We've obviously done a really close assessment around all of the customers and where their product ends up, et cetera. And obviously we're very cognizant of lithium and nickel prices and what's happening in that space. So we're pretty confident that this business is not going to be impacted by that.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. The next question comes with Ian Murrow with Armenet. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my question. Just with respect to the outlook slide with resources, I noticed some green and some amber on that outlook slide. Just conscious of or keen to understand how your key resource customers are indicating forward volumes and perhaps whether you have any customer, I guess, contracts up for renewal over the next couple of years and how you're generally thinking about that exposure into the mining cycle at this point in time. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think it's given it's the same sort of half amber, half green, it's no different to what it was last year. We'll continue to grow as we do. We'll grow modestly in that space. We've got some challenges with some customers. We had some challenges last year, and that's some mines go into care, and we manage through that and transition around that. We've got some contractual protections working through with one of the customers at the moment. But overall, we see growth, and we've taken that into our guidance. There is some challenges that's factored into our forecast.
Thanks, Paul.
I think we're going to have to actually wrap up.
I think it's the last question.
That's the last question. Yeah, okay.
I think.
There are no further questions at this time, and I'll now hand back to Mr. Digney for closing remarks.
Thank you for everyone on the call, and I'll see some of you guys soon. Thank you. Bye for now. Cheers.
That does conclude our conference call for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.